Peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly with a baseball bat. Hoos, good afternoon.
Hey.
Hey, man. So, this is the second time that we are recording this.
Yeah, but... déjà vu. Déjà vu. Déjà écoute. I heard it before. I didn't see it before. Yeah.
Oh, that's creepy.
Continue. Yeah.
So every once in a while, things don't quite go the way that we wanted to wanted them to go on recording. So we have to start over. Things break sometimes. But I will say what we should capture from the last time we were recording is everybody still should go and check out old internet flash animations like Homestar Runner. You said Group X?
Group X. Yeah, they produced a bunch of really fun videos. But it's old.
1997 had Gabo Corp, I think, and Eye For You. All these old flash things that we were looking at today in the office that made us reminisce of old easy times. And as you said, Hoos, the first time we did this, the democratization of animation.
Yeah. Yeah, that started it all off. And then when Flash died, we all went to HTML5 and it's gone again.
It's interesting to think about how that democratization of animation really sort of set a standard for so many things. Like when you look backwards now, how many things have been democratized in a way that anybody can start a business and start a revenue stream from any of these different ideas. Yeah. And at that point with Flash, it created all these new abilities. It's really quite interesting.
There's many companies, especially in the gaming scene, that are now going into this. They're giving away tools for free so people can build with their tools for free. And then as soon as these people start making money, they have to sort of pay a royalty or a kind of fee to that company. And the Unreal is a good example of this, the Unity engine as well. I think it's really cool that all of these tools are being given out for free, whereas before you would have to basically pay to become member of the club of makers, and now this has shifted.
Do you remember? I mean, when I was in university, Photoshop or Illustrator would cost $800 or $900 for a real license. Like for a student license, it was $200 or $300.
Yeah.
And now as a student, I can, I have to sign up for a year, and over time it costs me more money.
Yeah.
But the barrier to entry is so much lower. So this isn't the topic of this week, but it is so interesting to reflect back and think about just how many things have changed in the past 2 decades. And
definitely.
It's just crazy. So Hoos, this week's topic is a continuation of some of the stuff we talked about last week. So last week we went into the Raft cultural principles. We talked about why it was important to have a culture, why it was important that we tried to write this down, that we tried to create a common direction that everyone coming into the office could understand where we wanted to go, how we wanted to work together as a company, and how we wanted to work with clients. And clients is the key word, because number two, our cultural principle number two was we respect clients. And this week is all about client empathy. So many times we talk about user empathy. We are the biggest advocates for users, and yet we don't tend to think of the people that we are working with, that we are partnering with, that we are bringing their product to market, and have empathy for the type of work they are doing, who they are, how they're working, what their company is. So all of these topics is what we're going to dive into.
Yep.
How this came about was when we did hang the posters up for the cultural principles, we started having lots of conversations. And in the last week, we started to have a conversation within the studio around what happens when a designer or a design team or even us as a company doesn't necessarily believe in the idea, the concept, the proposition, the product that the client is bringing to us. And how do we work with the client if we don't necessarily believe them? And a lot of times what I see is designers will immediately go in and push back. And I saw this at the previous company that we worked for. I've seen this at other companies. This is not unique. And they'll say, well, I know you wanted X, but what you actually needed is A, B, C, D, E, F, G, right? And there's this immediate, I see what you're saying, but let me cut you off. And it almost feels like a weird version of mansplaining.
Exactly.
Designsplaining.
Yeah. It doesn't sound quite
right.
It
doesn't work as well. We need to come up. We'll come up with a catchy word for next week.
Yeah. But what's often associated with this is that this happens really fast. It is almost an opinion that is formed in the mind of the designer within 2 minutes. And then the rest of the meeting can actually be about how much better they know. And I think the first hurdle that you need to get out of the way is the simplest one. You probably mostly are not the target group that this proposition or product is for. And you just need to understand that your client knows this target group better.
Hopefully, not all the time. But I mean, to that point, yes, they probably had an idea of who this was going to serve. I mean, because we just did have 6 months ago, an idea that a client brought us to test. And we actually got to go back and say this proposition wasn't working. But that was actually great. It was amazing to have a client come to us and say, let's partner up. Let's test this. And we could go back and say, this product doesn't work. And they listened.
Exactly.
They said, okay, we're going to go back and rewrite the value proposition. That was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, but you made the client stronger for what we did instead of made the client feel ticked off during the first meeting because you told them that their stuff wasn't good.
Well, I don't even know if it's ticked off. It's just this idea that at points you are brought in as an expert, and then fine, you know, you give your opinion. But sometimes you're brought in to augment or amplify your partner's, your client's needs. And, you know, it's sort of reading that situation. One of the things that we talked about earlier was that if I'm an analyst, if my day is 8 hours, I'm spending 7 hours of that day consuming information, talking to people, reading articles, and I'm spending 1 hour of a day writing, something around that, right? But the majority of my time is really about information intake and then distilling, analyzing, and output.
Yep.
And from the design side, so many times when we walk in to companies, we do the opposite. We listen to a brief, and then we go back and spend multiple days on creating, hey, this was your brief, but maybe you really wanted this thing. And so we have this inverted analyst timeline, which I actually think would be much more beneficial if we worked, you know, in that sort of scale of 80% listening, understanding, you know, asking questions, and then going into the 20% of, okay, now that we've really understood it, how do we work on solving that?
Yeah, this is where the cultural principle about respecting clients goes
in. I thought you were going to say the questions over answers thing.
Goes hand in hand with valuing questions over answers. It's not like as a design agency, you're not expected to give answers, but you shouldn't start with answers before you've asked the correct questions and before you've figured out what the real question in the room is.
There was a great quote, and I think it's attributed to Einstein, but I have no clue. It may just be one of those things that somebody made up on the internet and put Einstein under it, and then I'm totally like, dude, I saw it on Facebook. But it was something along the lines of, if I have a problem, I spend 99%, or if I'm trying to solve something, I spend 99% of my time on solving the problem. Or I'm sorry, I am messing this one up. Shh, hold on.
Yeah.
Now, luckily, thanks to our podcast editor, nobody will know that just took me 3 minutes to look up. So it is attributed to Einstein. I don't know if it's true or not, but take the content of the quote rather than the person. If I were given 1 hour to save the world, I would spend 59 minutes defining the problem and 1 minute solving it. So ignore the saving the world part, but that idea that I'm taking the majority of my time to really define and craft the problem. And then once you have done that, you can effectively articulate the solution. I think a lot of designers do think they do this, but from my experience and what I see, a lot more information intake would be quite a positive thing.
I think it's part of making UI decisions daily. It's really hard to choose between option A, B, or C unless you really know what the problem is that you're trying to solve and what the requirements around that are and what the expectations of the user are. So more questions actually give you the right answer.
Agree on that. And then if we come into the idea of empathy, it is about understanding the person in this case, right? So you're looking to understand the problem, but at some points you really have to step back and have empathy for the person. So you have to start asking yourself, what are the motives of this person to bring this concept, this idea, this problem across the table to us? Are they, you know, is this something that they truly believe in that they came up with? Is it something that is being generated by political reasoning? Is it something that is research and development and they just want to test out in a sandbox? So the idea is you really have to know where they're coming from. And to me, that starts with asking them, but not in a condescending, maybe sounds too strong, but instead of like, what's the value of this? Right. Like, you know, the basics, what do you hope to achieve?
Yeah.
Right. What are you driving to do? And how did this come about?
You should not have a challenging attitude, but a curious attitude.
Yeah. A good example of this could be something like actually Insta stories.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and this is funny for a variety of reasons, I can imagine in so many situations that if Instagram had come to a design consultancy and said, hey, listen, we just don't have time internally. Snapchat is taking users from us. We just need to copy the stories thing, right? And this is where designers would probably be, no. Hold on, what are you trying to achieve with this? So in that way, it is almost problematic to ask the questions, because then they'll want to be, well, let's make something unique. Let's make it better. And Instagram is just, we're losing customers on a daily basis. Can you please just copy this, because people are used to it, and put it in the app? And I remember when it came out, if you go back and listen to the podcast, I complained about it, right? Yeah. I wasn't happy because I loved Snapchat. I still love what Snapchat stands for, even though I rarely use it anymore. But this entire idea of understanding from a client point of view, it was a defensive aspect. And all they needed to do was copy it. They didn't need to do anything unique. Now it's actually, I think it's better than Snapchat.
Yeah.
But at that point, I think it was literally almost the same, with the exception of like one or two tiny things. And that's some of the situations where if you come with this attitude of, okay, well, I heard you tell me that you want to copy Snapchat, but we don't like to copy things. We don't like to do this. Right? There's a whole business context that designers are missing, and they just want to rush ahead and they say, well, we can do that better for the user. But they're missing so much information that if they started to talk more and more, they would probably understand that, or if they just reflected a bit more on the situation.
Yeah, we need to, as designers, make sure that we try to understand the business, that we try to understand the politics. Of course, we're the advocate of the user in the whole layer cake of a company, but we actually are hired also to be the advocate of the business. They're hiring us to help them make their business better, not for us to tell them why their business isn't good or their business ideas aren't good.
This is actually one of the things that at Raft, when we've been working at the last year on that question of what is our story, one of those summary sentences that we have is, our goal is to help companies make business decisions based on user-centered methods, right? Like, we're not necessarily going to go and say, well, let's make the best design. That is a goal. But our end result is to affect business.
In a positive way.
Well, I think that's... Thanks, obvious.
But it's always scary whenever you are asked for increasing conversion or anything that's measured. I think for designers, it's always scary to wait for the numbers to come back.
No, it is. I personally love the idea that what I'm doing is tied to business results, because I want to know that what I am doing, or what we are doing at Raft, is affecting business in a positive way. To your point, hopefully not in a negative way. But yes, I agree that a lot of designers are nervous. I think they say they want that responsibility, but if you said, okay, guess what? If this goes south, you're going to get fired. I think people back down a little bit. I think it takes some guts and some gumption to say, we're responsible for this product now, for how people are going to use it, and our jobs are on the line.
I think there's one case, though, that you shouldn't miss, is when companies decide to go for a redesign. That redesign might actually be for making more things possible in a certain design, or preparing for a future roadmap where they need to redesign for. A redesign almost always has a negative impact on people's experience of an app, but afterwards it can get better.
There was I was just watching a great video from Jack Welch, although I know probably a lot of people don't like him. He was the old CEO of GE, if I remember correctly. But he was saying, there's always this strive for change, but we need to remember people hate change, right? Like, people were like, why did you do that? Why did you change it? So, and so many times clients may want change, and this could be, I think the biggest reason for change is usually there is something new that drives sales. This is also something that you need to understand from a design perspective, going back to that business aspect. But the larger point here is that, as we've just discussed, there are so many reasons that a client or a partner, or whatever you want to call the people that you work with, approach a consultancy or an agency and they want to have work done. There, you know, it's not always the same reason. Not everybody is uniform. And we take such pride in saying, we understand users. And I think we need to take a little bit more pride in saying, we understand clients. We understand the people that we're working with, and we can help them making their ideas and their decisions exponentially better than they would without us. So I think with that, Chus, it's about time to wrap up.
Yep.
So we will, oh no, we won't be here next week. We won't even be in Amsterdam. If you have, oh, well, okay, so there's actually a few things I need to plug here.
Yeah.
I should have plugged this at the beginning. So we will have articles up on our website, raftcollective.com, on the cultural aspect. So we were going to dive a little bit further into that. In the articles, you'll see some photos there. And if for those of you who follow our Instagram or our Facebook or LinkedIn, we've been posting videos in the past few weeks that we're going to be in Rio, and next week is the week. Chus and I on Saturday board a plane, and on Sunday we get to Rio, and on right Monday we hit the ground running doing workshops, agriculture, smallholder farmers. So really looking forward to that one. Actually, yeah. I'm pretty excited. I think it's going to be a great week, and Chus, you're going to be there helping out and filming everything.
Don't forget to say the name.
Thought for Food and Syngenta is who we're running the workshop with.
Exactly.
Thought for Food is the nonprofit organization that puts on this wonderful event. I went there last year. I was actually in Amsterdam last year, and they do an amazing event, amazing coordination, and they really go deep into how to solve different problems in unique ways. They're big proponents of, I'm not a fan of saying design thinking, user-centered thinking, but they're big proponents of helping large agriculture companies who are generally in love with doing things like filing patents, with thinking in new ways. And yeah. I can't say enough good things about them.
Yeah. So stay tuned. We're going to have footage coming from that as we are there. And of course, any interviews or things we find interesting, we will take home and publish for you guys.
And we will try to podcast from Rio. I think that'll be interesting. We need to pack our mics and head down there.
Podcast yeah. on the beach.
Exactly. Neither of us can go to the beach. We're way too white for that. We will get burnt to a crisp down there. We will be inside an air-conditioned hotel room.
Yeah.
So, Chus, I will see you for 12 hours on a plane ride very, very soon.
Yeah. See you Saturday, man.
Later, man.
Bye.
Bye.